Love to call the Policy Advisory Council to order this afternoon and welcome you to our September 12th meeting, strictly on Policy Advisory Council. What I'd like to do first is, first and foremost, thank you for you, those of you attending this morning's meeting and lunch discussion with the commission. I think the points that you brought up were very sound. I think the emotion and the stress that you put on a number of topics that we wanted to discuss with them was very well heard. And frankly, I'm pretty doggone proud of you guys because it's been a long year since the last time we met with them, and a lot has happened over that last year. And we've had a couple of differences of opinion as well as policy initiation from the council themselves. So I appreciate you guys very professionally and willingly sharing your ideas and your comments with the commission this morning. Secondly, as I call this meeting to order, I would love to start, to immediately to my left, and ask you all to please introduce yourselves, because we have three new members on our council, and they're all here today, and I would love for them to meet all of you. So I know with the commission earlier, we stated who we were and in what position we were appointed to be here at this committee, but you know, I'm going to allow you a little bit more, and if you have something particularly in your job that impacts transportation or something else you want to share with people, to please do so that we get a feel for who's around the table. So, Aegon.
Great. Thank you so much. My name is Aegon Turplin. I'm with Dolly. I'm the vice chair of the Policy Advisory Council. I'm looking forward to the next year of work. And in my day job outside of here, I'm the regional planning director of a group called SPUR, which is an urban policy civic group with offices in San Francisco and San Jose. So I live in San Francisco, but I try to wear a regional hat as much as possible.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carlos Castellanos. I'm representing the economy for the Policy Advisory Council. I live in Oakland, California, so I also tend to pay attention regionally, but also Alameda County issues, as well as also I was a some of you who were here earlier heard some of the mention of the previous iteration of the Advisory Council, which was a set of three committees. I was on the Minority Citizens Advisory Committee, so I'm one of the holdovers from the old days.
I am Tina Neuhausel, and my unpaid job is the director of a nonprofit called Sustainable Contra Costa. And I have to look at my name tag to see what area I represent, because we really my involvement really involves the environment and social equity and economy issues, all three of those. So I really enjoy being on this committee. I hope my goal, personal goal this year, you didn't ask this question. My personal goal is to really get more informed about what's going on in my own county and be prepared to really, you know, make a difference on this council.
Hi, my name is Kathleen Baker. I represent low-income residents from San Mateo County, and in my day job, I'm a senior community health planner for our public health department, who's prioritized this kind of policy change as a chronic disease and injury prevention strategy. So this benefits both my day job and my personal interests.
I'm Dolores Hawkins, and I represent seniors in Sonoma County. In my prior life, I lived in Oakland. I moved to Sonoma after retiring from the University of California. While I lived in Oakland, I was on the Oakland Planning Commission for 6 years, and I was on the Student Aid Commission for 6 years, and I was an MTC board of directors for 4 years. And so that's my interest in things that go on here.
My name is Wilbert Dinn. I represent San Francisco minority communities. Previously, I actually was on the MCAC when it first started. So I'm back in full circle again on the same committee, or it's now Policy Advisory Council. I spent 38 years with United Airlines as transportation, in transportation on maintenance on it. I spent 5 years with the MTA as a director. So I've been, I grew up on the New York City subways until I moved out here back in 61. So I've been in transportation ever since. Thank you.
Jim, we come to you.
I take it I'm next. I am Jim Blackston. I'm new to the Policy Advisory Council. I'm one of the three people that was just mentioned. I'm from San Francisco and represent the disabled community at large. In my day work, quite often it's evening work, if you will. I have, for the past several years, been running my own business, Equal Access Plus, Inc. We've provided quite a bit of consulting to persons and groups in the field of adaptive technology as it pertains to people with disabilities. I love computers. I live on them. I'm sure glad that emails have been in for the last 10 years. So that's the kind of work that I've been doing, and it's really interesting, some of the adaptive technology that's out there that's available. And, of course, one of my big issues is accessibility when it comes to websites and the like. So when we get into the arena of transportation, it'll be the same. Accessibility is what's really important to me. Finally, I'm also transitioning into the field of financing as a private lender and putting together deals. So I'm a very busy person, and I look forward to being involved.
Linda Jeffrey Sailors. My background started political. I helped form the City of Dublin and also the Livermore Amador Valley Transit Authority and all of the other things that go with that, like paratransit and dial-a-ride, that kind of thing. I've remained active in the transportation field. I'm working now to see that BART gets Livermore, and Livermore gets BART, I mean. I stopped the other one. I started the other one. Oh, and I am currently on the campaign committee for the Measure B1. So I'm busy with those kinds of things, but I'm really, really interested in seeing that the economic issues in Alameda County are heard by this committee.
I'm Fred Wright Lopez, and in a prior incarnation, I was an attorney for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, where I spent a good deal of time in exotic places like Bogota, Colombia, and Guatemala. Never did get sent to Paris or London. I retired after an accident resulted in my loss of vision, and spent my time doing advocacy work on behalf of individuals with disabilities. I represent Contra Costa County's senior disabled community. More recently, I've transitioned. I don't know whether it's appropriate or not to mention, but my current day job is I'm running for an open seat on the BART Board of Directors. Thanks in part to my tenure here and the fact that after listening to you all for 2 years, I'm a little smarter now, hopefully, and a little more acquainted with the issues, and I figure that if I'm going to complain, I need to step up and be responsible. So thank you very much.
Hi, Kendall Oku, and I represent the minority community in Marin County. And for the last 40 years, I've been involved in heavy construction around the Bay Area in Northern California, mining, heavy construction, freeway building, industrial parks, etc. And I recently retired as a representative from Operating Engineers Local 3, representing heavy equipment operators in four states, Utah, Northern Nevada, Northern California, and Hawaii. And so I don't have a day job. Go ahead, Marshall.
I think he's got a day job, all right. He's just trying to keep it secret from us. Marshall Loring's my name. I've served on Elderly and Disabled Advisory Committee I think my total time at MTC now is approaching 8 years. I'm a senior representative from San Mateo, San Mateo County. I've been around the Bay Area for quite a while. I used to ride the Key system from home in Alameda to Berkeley to go to Cal. I saw the Key system demolished by National City Lines, which was a tragedy that we're beginning to pay for now by trying to restore some of those functions and services. I want to do what I can to help MTC with transportation and transit in particular as it affects seniors.
Rich Hedges, economic advisor from San Mateo County. I sit on a state board with about 600 licensees through the Department of Consumer Affairs, the Workforce Investment Board, and the Transportation Authority in San Mateo County. And what I find is, especially through MTC, there's so much synergy because transportation touches everybody, that there are aspects of all of those that come into my life, especially the Workforce Investment Board through the Lifeline funding here at MTC. And I find this a really good group, very collegial. We don't always agree, but it's always fun trying to reach agreement.
Alan Talansky, in my paid life, I'm an executive vice president with the EBLNS Development. We develop transit-oriented developments. That's what we specialize. That's what we decided to do 5 years ago, and we've been quite successful in getting some going in very difficult times. In my non-paid life, I'm part of the Locust Group, which is a legislative group trying to get money for transit and for transportation. And that's chaired by Chris Leinberger, who's probably one of the experts in livable communities. I'm on the ULI Council for Responsible Property Investment, and I'm the chair of the Technical Analysis Panel Committee for the ULI for the San Francisco area. So I seem to keep busy other than my development career. And I'm right now the at-large economic chair, at-large economic chair for your group.
Frank Robertson, member of the council from Contra Costa County, responsible for minority issues.
Your mic was a little quieter because Alan's was still on, so.
I see.
I was stealing your fire.
That's all right.
It's all squared now.
I don't need to restart or.
No, you don't.
Okay, good. I serve on a number of boards and commissions, including Contra Costa County Mayor Board. I'm a senior vice president for a national, international housing construction company, and I'm also a staff member for Alameda County Social Services Agency. I think that's enough.
Hey, I'm Richard Bernhardt. I'm the disabled representative from Solano County. And like Marshall mentioned here, I'm one of the holdovers from the old EDAC since 2005. That's when they first appointed me, when I still had my old previous day job. And since then, on the county level, they've asked me to serve as the MTC rep for the Solano Transit Authority's Paratransit Coordinating Council, and I've served there, you know, about 5 years now or whatever. And then just recently, the new SolTrans or Solano County Transit, which is where they're trying to combine the Vallejo and Benicia Transit, they now have a Citizens Advisory Committee that I was appointed on there by the Vallejo City Council, and I currently serve as the chair right now for that for the next 2 years. So that's going to be an interesting challenge there too. It's a new Joint Powers Authority and having the opportunity to get that started. And so you know, up and down there, they kind of say I'm the transit guy in Solano County because I'm up and down, you know, the local, the county, and the here at the region. So that's my role in the transportation.
I'm Randy Kinman. I represent, I'm the low-income representative from Santa Clara County, and I was trying to think back of how long I've been doing this with MTC. I got involved with MTC as part of my volunteer, this is like my day job, as a volunteer with what was called the Strong Neighborhoods Initiative in San Jose, where they actually taught people how to interact with governmental agencies and taught them how to organize, which was brilliant. Because as one person said, now that you've introduced us all to each other, don't expect us to not use that against you. But the one thing that I discovered in all of the planning processes was transportation was the key to everything, and none of us knew anything about it. So I got more involved with it, and it was like even when, as a planning commissioner, I really didn't understand the regional impact of transit and transportation. And I figured out that this is where some of the money came from. So that was why I got involved on the Minority Citizens Advisory Committee. And I will say that we are legacy partners. We are not holdovers or retreads or anything else that we were called. We are legacy partners, and we have the institutional knowledge that staff, in conjunction with staff, and we just have a different view than staff does. I served as the chair of the Equity Committee on subcommittee for that group, and I currently serve as the vice chair for the Equity and Access Committee for this group.
Hi, I'm Lori Reese Brown, and I represent the minority low-income persons in Solano County. And one reason as to why I wanted to get on this committee is because I felt a need to really address transportation issues as it pertain to the low-income communities in Solano County. And particularly since I am a Solano County resident, I had to at one time actually commute to work in East Palo Alto. It was a very treacherous and crazy thing to do, but you know, nonetheless, I had to do it. And the support network for transit here in this Bay Area was just horrendous. There was no other way I could get there but by car, unless I spent 3 hours trying to get different forms of transit to get there. So that's one reason as to why I wanted to serve on the committee. And besides the fact that I felt I could bring a lot to this committee, having 25 years of experience in city planning, working in various regions throughout the cities throughout the nation, to include Atlanta, Georgia, South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina, Long Beach, California, the Bay Area now, and numerous cities up here. So I now currently work for the city of Richmond. I work for the city managers, work directly for our city manager in Richmond as his special city planner on special projects. And so a lot of those projects are now involving or evolving transportation related issues. We have the Lawrence Berkeley Lab that's now going to be stationed in the city of Richmond, and of course transit would be a key component to the lab. And so I'm really happy to serve on this committee, just knowing that a lot of things are kind of growing and taking off here in the community. And then you know, I looked at transit in other countries. I've been over to China and then to Brazil and then to Thailand, and I can't see why we can't get it together here when it comes to transportation, when all those countries that I just mentioned really have very good transportation networks. What is the problem with the U.S., since we're supposed to be leading the nation, leading the world in some of the most innovative technologies and systems? Why can't we do it here in California? What is that big challenge? And so that's one reason as to why I wanted to serve.
All right. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Clary. I'm the low-income representative for Sonoma County, and like Jim and Alan, this is my first meeting, so thank you. Everybody's been so wonderful and welcoming, and this is kind of a scary thing to do. In my day job, I'm executive director of an organization that supports people who have intellectual and developmental disabilities. We operate a private transportation service, but many people that we serve also use public transportation. Actually, most of the people we serve use public transportation, and we teach a lot of mobility training and other basic skills like that. I'm really interested in this because, like Randy, I really feel that transportation is just the big elephant in the room, or whatever the right word to say is. You can probably think of it better. Wait, how did you say it? Yeah. She nailed it, and I just think it's so very important, and I really want people that I know to have a voice in that process, so thank you.
Yokia?
This is my debut. I'm excited. My name is Yokia Mason, and I represent low-income families, low-income and people in Alameda County, and I currently work for the Alameda County Public Health Department, and I work every day on the front lines of what's going on in the community. I provide direct services with families, specifically pregnant and parenting moms. And so I see a lot of the issues that they face. Transportation is a big issue. I've been a big advocate for bus passes and whatever the moms need to get to where they need to be. And so I'm not happy with the underrepresentation of people who are providing direct services. And I think it's very easy to be able to, you know, sit back and say this is what they need. But when you see the cries, when you see the pain, and when you see that stuff, it changes your viewpoint of what the priorities are. And so I'm just I'm pleased to be able to be here because I'm on the front lines of it. And transportation is very expensive, I have to say that. We provide bus passes, and they're like $80 for an adult. And so the federal government's not going to pay for that for us forever, you know. And so I'm just really excited to be here. And I advocate. I've been to D.C. I go all over with every issue, from violence to health to transportation to anything that involves low-income people. And I think one of the interesting things was that I was at another meeting, like a planned meeting, and I just spoke, and someone from MTC came up to me and said, oh, you need to be on the policy board, you know. I was just like, what is that? I don't want to be involved in anything else. And so that's how I got here, because someone was doing outreach and they saw me and they gave me that the flyer, and that was some time ago. And so I'm just excited to be able to be a voice for people that aren't heard.
Tina.
Sorry, I just also wanted to share, because I talked about Contra Costa and what I'm doing right now, but before that I was Education and Outreach Director for Sustainable San Mateo County, and I was also a policy aide working on workforce and transportation issues for MTC Commissioner Jim Bell back in 2002 and 2003. And I also co-authored the Hydrogen Highway Blueprint Plan under the Air Resources Board. And I'm really excited to, I hope that we can begin to address maybe at least one of the overwhelming long-term issues like consolidation that, you know, I remember talking to city councils back, you know, a long time ago about. And but also having a concrete plan to address our short-term issues that we can really make a difference on right now.
Great. And I'm your chair, Dolly Sandoval. I teach high school math in my day life, Algebra 2 and Geometry this year, and was elected previously to the Cupertino City Council and served as the VTA board chair and served with VTA. And I represent Santa Clara County, the senior population, Santa Clara County. On that note, I just would like to then go to our second item of the agenda. But I appreciate everybody taking a minute and introducing themselves, not just for our new members Elizabeth, Jim, and Alan, but to remind all of us, we get so caught up in our issues every year that I kind of forgot, oh, yeah, my dad was a Local 3 member. I forgot I had that connection with Kendall. And I think it's good for us to hear that once a year. Before we go on to the minutes, though, we are served by two wonderful staff people. And so, Pam and Leela, would you take a moment and just tell us how long have you been here? What have you been doing since you've been here?
Okay. I am your staff liaison, Pam Grove, and I also was the staff liaison for MCAC, and I was hired at MTC almost 15 years ago as a secretary, and have been pleased to have been promoted to public information officer, and I help with outreach in low-income minority communities and at staff view as well. I have other duties at MTC, but this is by far, this and outreach to minority low-income communities is the most rewarding, I think. So,
well, I've been here, Leela Tolefo, I'm the secretary here for Policy Advisory Council. Been here for about a year now. Prior to that, for 3 years, I moved to Oregon, where I work for the State of Oregon Department of Transportation there. And then prior to that, I was at MTC. So I'm back. I used to be the secretary for the programming and allocations, and now I work for Randy Rentschler, our director of legislation and public affairs. Thanks.
Thank you for being one of our legacy partners then. Okay. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes then from our last meeting, July 11th.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. Abstention. And we have an abstention from Kathleen, who was absent, I believe. Right. Okay. I would take public comments on items not on the agenda at this point if I had any public comment cards to take. But I don't, so... And I don't see anybody waving one at me, so we will go on then to the next item. If there is an item on the agenda you'd like to speak on, the public comment cards are over to your left on a table. The subcommittee report, Randy, are you going to make the Equity and Access subcommittee report? Thank you.
Sure, this will be quick. Equity and Access met this morning. We had a recap from Jennifer about the Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Transportation Plan update, which is a big way of saying we reviewed the matrix that was produced, and I think in 2007, to try and update it and see if there was anything else. It identifies the gaps in service for seniors and disabled and low-income, and my understanding after today is we're adding another column for veterans so that we can identify the significant gaps there. This is the first time that I'd heard of MAP 21, which is the new realignment of some of the federal funding coming in, and I will push back to staff. I was under the impression we had to respond to this, that we were on a shorter deadline than what Ann indicated at our last meeting in this room. So she said we were on an 18-month turnaround, and our timeline on this is actually only 90 days. So
you're talking, when you talk about MAP 21, you're talking about the changes, well, that program and how it affects the coordinated plan.
Right.
So that's a different thing than what Ann was bringing up, which is MAP 21 in general. So Rebecca is coming to the council next month at your meeting to go over MAP 21, and I will ask her to add basically that discussion of how it impacts the coordinated plan as well.
Thank you. And that's going to be coming back to that, to the Equity and Access and to this committee. And then the Regional Equity Working Group met this morning, and we had such a robust conversation on the PDA growth strategy that we never made it to the investment analysis methodology. So that'll be coming back next month, I'm assuming, since most of us had to leave that meeting. And that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you. Questions? Perfect. Okay, item number 5 is our HUD, Regional Sustainable Communities Planning Grant. Doug, you've been waiting patiently, but now you know more about us than any other person outside of this room.
It's true.
That's a good thing, too.
I think so. Thank you all, and to those of you who are new, nice to meet you. My name is Doug Johnson from MTC's Planning Group. I will try and keep this somewhat brief, recognizing introductions went a little long. But just to give you a little bit of context, 2 years ago, HUD developed a regional planning grant program, which previously hadn't existed. HUD, obviously, most of their programs have been very much more focused on affordable housing and community reinvestment. And they created this program with a number of very lofty goals, or beyond lofty, I might even offer. MTC, in partnership with a large group of nonprofits and cities, applied in 2010 unsuccessfully. We applied again last year in what turns out was the final year before the program was unfunded, and successfully received a grant of about $4.9 million. And just to give context a little bit to the work, we've been trying to use the Plan Bay Area work done over the last, it seems like, 4 or 5 years, although I believe it's only about 2 years. But the key work and some of the key findings from Plan Bay Area to queue up this grant and some of the work that we'll be doing starting now. We're really jumping into it as Plan Bay Area rapidly winds down. We're really excited to get moving on implementing some of the things where we've recognized we've come up short. Our grant really emphasizes the first two objectives of the HUD program around economic competitiveness and revitalization, as well as social equity, inclusion, and access to opportunity. That certainly isn't to say that we don't have issues on items 3 and 4, but we also feel like we actually have, I think, a better game plan on those through other forums and other programs in the region. One of the things just for you all to be aware of that comes along with this is that folks in the Bay Area and mostly on the public agency side applying for a specific list of grants, in particular at HUD, receive extra points on grant applications because of being a member of a successful granting region. You get this lovely thing called preferred sustainability status. T-shirts are available at the door. But, you know, I think in all seriousness, it reflects the fact that we have put together a very strong group of both, like I said, public and NGO stakeholders to work on this and have done over the last 10 or 12 years a substantial amount of regional land use and transportation planning that, while highly imperfect, though it may be, puts us far ahead of almost every other region in this country. And I can say that having talked to my peers at many of them. So we are in good shape, and I think this grant in part reflects that and really pushes us to implement what we have. As I said, we're really focused in this body of work on economic opportunity, and then also on affordable housing and what we're calling housing the workforce. And one of the things that we've seen is incredibly inconsistent job growth in this region. Before you dig into what kind of jobs and where the jobs are and so on and so forth, we have had very uneven economic growth in this region. And obviously, as well, we've had pretty disparate growth opportunities as well. And I think this is one of the slides that I think best highlights that. But it really carves up the Bay Area's workforce, working age population by educational attainment. And what you see Bay Area-wide is that while we have one of the absolute highest rates of educational attainment, and in terms of advanced degree workers, I mean, you know, over 20% in parts of our region. We also still have a quarter of our population on average and a third of it in the North Bay that only have a high school degree. And all you have to do is look at that median income for each of those levels of educational attainment to see that we have an increasingly bifurcated economy in the Bay Area, And we are really coming up short in providing opportunities for middle-income, stable, quality jobs. And so one of the things this group, this effort is really seeking to do is to really tackle that issue in particular. Not to say that Google might not want some help, you know, finding their latest software engineer from, you know, whatever country or elite university. But that person can probably afford the plane ticket and can afford some of the moving expenses. We're far more concerned with the folks that can't afford those, can't afford the educational programs. Another big issue, as I mentioned, that came up was around housing the workforce. And we had a couple of measures from our equity analysis. And for those of you who are new, you'll see from Plan Bay Area that we had five measures that we were looking at specifically on issues of equity. And one of the things, not a huge startling revelation, but when you combine the cost of housing and transportation, this is an extremely unaffordable region if you don't make a lot of money. And, you know, that's, again, it's not rocket science. But these numbers are hard to argue with. And I think really put us on point to deal with and think about how we increase affordability. I think Yukiya's comments about transportation affordability are dead on. The Bay Area also, depending on who you ask, has one of the top two or three most expensive real estate markets. And that, of course, is really eating people's family budgets alive. We also really flagged another issue that's important, but as we really in the long term seek to promote infill development and to take a better advantage of a lot of our existing transit, we do run a real risk of displacing, not by choice, our existing low-income and minority communities that have long resided in those places. So this effort is going to look a little different than work that we've done in the past. And it really is very much a bottoms-up approach to work. It is anchored by two work groups that are focused on the subject areas, as well as by an equity collaborative, which is going to be a collaborative of community-based organizations from across the region to really help plug into both regional and local decision-making along the way. And then the project is going to be overseen by a steering committee, which is going to be, as I will show you on the next slide, a little different, as I said, than things we've done in the past. It's going to be more of a shared board. It will meet following MTC and ABAG planning meetings on the second Fridays every other month. But you can see that we actually are going to have basically about a 50-50 split between elected officials and then NGO partners from foundations, from community-based organizations, from larger nonprofits. So we will actually have a board right now. It looks like it actually probably won't take this exact shape, but of about 15 or 16 seats. As I mentioned, we have the two work groups as well as the Equity Collaborative. Those are the organizations that are going to be leading them for the first 12 months. These co-chair roles are rotating, so folks have a number of different opportunities to get involved, different types of organizations from different places as well. The Economic Prosperity Work Group is really focused at first on looking at a regional analysis for economic growth and opportunity. What is that? Be a probably fair question to ask. We're still trying to figure that out is a bit of the answer. But the other part of the answer is that, as Rich has mentioned, and I think others have as well, obviously at the city and the county level, there are institutions that are already underway with community colleges and others to work on workforce training opportunities to ensure that we're developing a better workforce for tomorrow. And one of the biggest things we do, we've identified with some of our nonprofit partners already almost 100 reports written in just the last 3 or 4 years on job opportunities and economic development, in particular for middle and lower income workers. So It's not to say it isn't for lack of efforts being undertaken. I think one of the hopes is to try and look at these with a bit more of a regional scan and then think about some of the real opportunities we might have to support that with work that MTC and ABAG could do in the future, as well as work we are already on the hook for. And then following out from that first will be a number of pilot projects to essentially try and provide proof of concept on the things that we discover during that analysis and strategy phase at the beginning. The housing the workforce is a far more straightforward body of work by comparison. A number of issues have been flagged already that are, I think, well understood. Not surprisingly, as I mentioned, we've got a piece of work in there to look at tracking tools for development and displacement that we are eager to get a handle on and develop. Some really kind of technical work around thinking about ways to reduce the costs of infill development and affordable housing by managing parking supply and parking demand, and as well as the need to think about new housing financing mechanisms based on the elimination of redevelopment. And then lastly, as I mentioned, there's the Equity Collaborative, and those folks will be providing, I think, a good way to go between some of the projects that we are going to be working on in as a team, but then also bring that work to local communities, but also to hear what local communities want to see prioritized as work goes forward. I think another interesting opportunity we're really excited about is to think about how we might be able to use some of the grant funding in this bucket, if you will, to support some of the bigger low-income communities that have not historically been highly engaged in the regional dialogue and with other regional CBOs. And I often think about Richard's hometown. Big chunk of Vallejo has a lot of folks that could certainly use a voice at the regional table. Richard, you do a great job. And East San Jose and others. We often hear a lot from folks in San Francisco and Oakland and maybe a little bit more to Richmond, but that is not where the low-income minority population in this region ends. So we think that this is a really exciting opportunity to support that effort and to grow a network of community organizations across the region. This is what the grant budget looks something like. You can see this is spread out over the next 2.5 years. But again, we've really tried to push most of this money out of this building. As interesting and important as the work MTC does, obviously the work that is being done locally we recognize is extremely important. I would offer personally typically more important than a lot of the work that we're doing. And I think we want to really just think about how we can set the table and assist, but push pilot grant funding out to local projects that could provide, again, proof of concept, but also provide new models in cooperation between public entities and NGOs. And just a little bit of the timeline, I would like to point out that I still think it's summer. I hope you all do too. MTC and ABAG have named their representatives to our steering committee, and they're going to have their first meeting on the 26th of this month. And so we're excited to really see that get going. Our working groups have really just started meeting on a regular basis in the last couple of months, so we're really seeing that getting moving as well. And we're looking to make some initial awards here in the next 4 months. So with that, I'd happily take any questions. Also, I think if you're interested in how you can get involved, I would certainly ask you to send your interest to myself and Pam, and maybe if you could identify which of the three groups you might be most interested in participating, and that would be a helpful piece of framing information for us.
Thank you, Doug. So this is a grant that we've applied for and then actually got funded. Is there any policy implications that you'll think this committee needs to take up as we go forward in this process?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. It's a little hard to know at the beginning of any planning process to know, you know, when and where the timely, you know, points might be. But I think it would be appropriate to certainly check back in with this group on some of the key findings as we start getting some you know, projects going and we start to really, you know, I think drill down into some of the issues this grant seeks to tackle.
Great, thank you. Before I take questions and comments from the my committee members, I do have a member of the public who'd like to speak, and so we're going to allot you 2 minutes. And so Jane Crayman from an organization called Stand, please come up to the microphone. Thank you.
Yes. Jane Kramer. What I don't hear you saying is if you re-educate or educate persons for jobs that are not available to them with their present skills, don't you also have to look at what kind of an economic system you want? I mean, that in itself influences where you've got this huge group of people at the bottom who can't find jobs. So do you not need to start thinking about not necessarily a totally different kind of economic system, but you need to look at least where you can improve the system you've got? Where are the gaps? Where are the pitfalls? Where are the things that don't work?
It's Thank you,
just Jane. Food for suggestion.
Sure. I think it's a good, I mean, certainly is a fair point. One of the big initiatives that's actually starting off, that's actually been going on for the last year, is a pretty exhaustive analysis of the Bay Area economy. It may not get certainly to all the structural issues I think your question might beg about, you know, job training obviously is not really the end-all, be-all. I mean, I think we all know this goes back probably quite a bit further than that, and I think the educational attainment slide, you know, bears that out. But one of the things we were eager to do is to look at sectors where we do think there is opportunity for folks to be trained, you know, to really grow our workforce so we don't have to import things like nurses and technicians and others from across the country and across the world, which is something we regularly hear about, is that there are jobs, you know, that do exist for which we are not delivering a work necessarily all the workers we need. You know, and I think part of the story is let's try and get away from some of the stories and let's get to a little harder understanding of really what is going on.
Great, thank you. And then one last question for myself. In terms of your grant budget and then the timeline in fall 2012, it states their grant criteria. So is that coming back to this committee for input? Because I would think that's where some of those policy issues would perhaps arise.
It was not intended to. I think, as you can see, the grant is really heavily embedded in the existing work group structure and with the Equity Collaborative, and all of those folks are helping to inform the development of criteria, projects, and project prioritization. I do believe if members of this group want to provide input, it would be entirely appropriate for them to participate in those work groups and do so.
Dolores, I think I saw your hand up originally.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, would you let us know who was funded when this happens in this winter?
Yeah, Pam and I will coordinate on that.
Okay, thanks. That's all.
Frederica?
You may have mentioned it, but I apologize if I missed it. Relative to communities of interest, I have a couple of questions. One is specifically, how do you incorporate those interest groups serving seniors? Specifically, those interest groups are individuals dealing with the disabled, the paratransit community, the providers, particularly the users. And how do you and what plans do you have to reach out to limited English-speaking groups, such as, for example, the Vietnamese population in San Jose or the Spanish-speaking population along the Monument Corridor area specifically. Can you address that for me?
Let's see here. As for all three of those, I mean, I think, first of all, the good news is that since we're early in the process, there's plenty of time for folks to get plugged in. So I would encourage you to offer, you know, via Pam or myself, a direct list of contacts and people that you think, or groups that you think should and be involved over the course of the grant. I would certainly welcome that kind of input and direction. Relative to the LEP community issue, that is certainly a huge issue. It's interesting to see how many times that issue alone comes up in the Workforce Investment Board reports that we've been reading from around the Bay Area, that, you know, the fact that we don't. So there's an engagement issue, and then there's also a training issue. And so it's almost, if you will, in some cases, a double barrier. And I think that's a very good question. We don't have right now, Frank, a great game plan on that. But I think, again, that's part of why we're at the beginning of a process. I think we have a little bit of experience from the last couple of years through the work that Pam's been doing with a diverse group of community-based organizations and Plan Bay Area. But that was this offers more funding and I think a better opportunity for us to go deeper and farther than that work was able to go.
I have Richard Hedges and then Frank.
Hey, Doug, are we going to do any outreach on this? I'm asking for a reason. There's a meeting at Oracle last Friday of October with housing and workforce advocates. The Housing Leadership Council sponsors it. And I don't know whether there's an interest on your part, but there may be a way of getting you in there if you're interested. Talk to me later.
Thanks.
Frank?
My interests are twofold. Do you have any plans to reapply for grants of this type so that you will continue the areas of this program or processes that you find to be very successful, so they will be replicated, so it wouldn't be a one-time thing? And secondly, why wouldn't this be a seed money and actually, goes to the first question. The seed money thing goes to the first question. What is this funds or this program doing to break the cycle of poverty, dependency, that's very endemic in our society? And I think it's part of our mission to deal with some of this issue of poverty that is very prevalent in minority population.
Because it's easier, I'll take the first question. We will not be reapplying because Congress has stopped funding this program in their wisdom. One of the points I would like, though, to draw to your attention, I bring up this slide. This is, the annual budgets for HUD, DOT, and the Environmental Protection Agency. This does actually not include workforce investment boards and all the other dollars that come down into and through various entities, but that could and I would argue should be aligned more closely to give this work legs, if you will, after our 2.5-year run. I don't pretend to think that this grant is going to break the cycle of poverty anywhere, I'm afraid. But one of the things that a number of the folks that have been involved to date are very excited about is the opportunity to have discussions across transportation agencies, workforce investment boards, housing departments, public health departments, with community groups, with stakeholders, and to really be thinking in a far more strategic and comprehensive fashion about how we can help, at least with the resources we have, try to make a bigger dent. But it's not going to change school quality or crime, in the next 2 or 3 months, or pick your other issue of choice, I'm afraid.
Oh, may I follow up? I was not indicating that this would either make a dent or actually make a significant impact. But what I was trying to say, this will be a starting point, because no one can deny the fact that education is the most important equalizer in our society. And if we are not tackling education from the elementary school level, we're probably wasting our time. Because if people fail from that level, they are bound to fail at the secondary and tertiary level. So why don't we find a way to deal with that particular area? And it doesn't have to be a lot of money, but at least we will know we are doing something. And if it's successful, I'm pretty sure folks will fund it. But please, we'll try. We know where the problems are, but we appear to ignore it and just applying band-aids. It's not doing much of anything. 30 years from now, it's going to be the same if we don't deal with the underlying problem.
I'll just say I apologize for misinterpreting your original point, Frank.
All right, point well taken. Randy.
Thank you. I did kind of want to follow up with the idea that the criteria doesn't come back here, and that we have no real input as a body out of either this group or our only standing subcommittee, because I'm concerned that the work groups will be not representational of the region. It's really easy to get people on a work group that all kind of live in the same area or work in the same area, and that's there. And that's the brilliance of this group, is the fact that there's a lot of people from around the region, and we can understand better if we've never left the confines of BART zones. We still understand what happens in Napa and Sonoma and Solano counties because of our interaction with each other. So I'm just a little concerned about keeping us on top of these situations if we are truly to be an advisory committee, and especially when I'm not hearing a built-in, we need to include the senior disabled community as strongly as we can in all of this.
I mean, I'll only offer, MTC essentially applied on behalf of 40 organizations. So we just hold, I mean, I really see our role as holding and distributing the money. So our voice is equal to a number of other organizations. Some are very, very small, and some are, the city of San Francisco. I'm not asking, the city of San Francisco isn't necessarily taking everything to their planning commission, on this project, and maybe they should when the city decides to pursue some work. So, I guess I'll certainly consider that and talk to some folks, but on that joint projects committee. But I don't want to give the impression to anyone else that's in the network currently that MTC's voice is more important than all the other organizations' voices we already have so far, and all the other voices that we expect to have come on over the next couple of years.
I have Egon, and then Carlos, and then Kathleen.
Great, thanks so much. As someone, I've been a little bit involved with this project thus far, and wanted to maybe comment on, Randy, what you're raising, but also maybe to start with, commending Doug, because this project, as it sort of unfolded, there are organizations and cities from throughout the Bay Area engaged on it. Certainly there could be more local government involvement, but there's been a lot of local government involvement in the SCS RTP. So there's a little weariness of getting too engaged in lots of things, but I think that you should all just probably think of this as just a project MTC's doing with a bunch of other folks. I mean, we're going to hear in a moment about the climate initiatives grant. MTC gives out grants and projects all the time, and so it doesn't all need to kind of come back here for the intricate details of how that project unfolds. I think this project is different, though, because it's totally an open process whose goal very much is to have a different dialogue between cities and organizations and regional stakeholders about the region's economy and about the region's housing. And the comment I wanted to make about how I think it relates back to this group is that, at least on the economic development side, it's the one I've been involved in a little bit, it's really trying to think about the relationship and the intersection between economic development, workforce development, and transportation. And what I mean by that is that workforce development boards aren't always training people towards jobs that are aligned with a local economic development plan. And they're rarely thinking about where those jobs are located and whether or not there's transit accessibility to them as a fundamental requirement of how they think about economic development or workforce development. So one potential outcome of this project could be identification of policies or subsidies that cities do to encourage job growth in places that are not transit accessible. Is that happening in the Bay Area? And to the extent that is, that puts a burden on transit agencies to provide services far away, and then those transit agencies have to come back to MTC to ask for money, and it's less efficient. So I think this body ought to think about, are we all kind of crossing the dots and the T's together, whatever, or as it relates to putting our resources towards promoting economic growth in a way that doesn't continually strain transit service. That's just sort of one example of, I think, the kinds of ideas that might get unearthed through this project. But I encourage any of you to get out there to participate in it, because it really is intended to be an open process that has a different kind of dialogue and discussion from other initiatives.
Thank you for that clarification. Carlos.
Doug, I wanted to also congratulate MTC for being successful in getting this this grant. This is a major accomplishment. And I guess one question that came up as I was listening to the other comments around the room, or not question, but really kind of a comment, is that I agree that MTC is one seat in the room with others. This is a regional planning grant, and I think MTC and ABAG have that distinction that I can't say who else is in the room, but I mean, the two agencies do think regionally, so I think you should capitalize on your role there. Of course, you're not going to run roughshod over everyone else, but that's kind of the role that you come to the table with. And so whatever we can do to help bolster that role, I've already heard some good comments here about, you know, the elderly and disabled participation and the education commitment or thinking about education in this grant. I think those are great ideas. And if I may, I mean, this is just my take on it, because I see that this is as scaling up what you could consider like a community plan. It's just like now we're scaling it up to a region, which I'm sure in doing that, it's probably not that simple. But the way I'm seeing it right now is that you look at different factors in the community to see what is what's working and what's not. So you're looking at the assets, like it was being brought up, like you said, that there's this kind of a workforce, there's this much education, and there's these kinds of jobs, and then you try and match up where are the stresses that don't allow people in that area to be able to access those jobs. So I could see it's probably not this easy, but scaling it up to a regional level, saying, okay, what do we already have? What is our asset base here in the Bay Area? People, education, lack of education would be some of the stressors. And same thing with like what kind of jobs, what opportunities for education do we have, and can we connect the two? And transportation is a key role in that. But you'll see other issues too coming up about the affordability to live in these areas and the accessibility to quality education and accessibility to safety. It's not even be able to get from one place to the other, or fear for people's. I don't want to get into it, but I mean that's the way I see it, and it'd be interesting to see if we could scale that up to the regional level as part of this grant, as part of the planning process, and so that then we can inform maybe there's different variations of this, one in a more rural or more suburban area versus a model that's more urban, and saying, you know, in an urban area, we see these kind of factors, and these are the kind of things that the local cities need to be dealing with, and maybe in a suburban area or a more rural area, they look different.
Thank you. Kathleen.
Thank you, Doug. I wanted to ask a couple of questions. First of all, is there going to be any looking at, well, no, let me start with this one. Is this responding to some of the trends that have been identified in, like, through the Plan Bay Area process, we're seeing some future changes in industries and sort of employment patterns. Is it responding to those projections, or is it looking to shape and move those projections? Is number one.
You know, it's funny with projections because they're a little bit of, you know, what you, the future you want to see, right? I think to some extent, and I, you know, I think this is really trying to look both. It's anchored in today. It's anchored in what we know today with an eye towards the future. I mean, if you look at trends from the last 10, 20, and then 5 years, I mean, if you look at where some job opportunities might be and some important demographic trends, you know, it might start to bear out. And, you know, like healthcare is obviously a big one. We have a very large, rapidly aging population that's going to require a lot more healthcare workers. Are we going to have, the Bay Area could supply all those healthcare workers. Are we going to be able to? Are we going to actually, you know, educate and train folks to fill those slots? I mean, that's just one very specific example that we do talk a lot about, because it's actually kind of it's one of the more obvious ones, if I might. So I think it's trying to really look at the present, but it certainly does recognize that, you know, there are long-term trends that are seen that we want to also be thinking about.
My other question would be, in terms of things that fall outside of the more traditional educational realm, you know, high school, college, our Workforce Investment Board, back when we were all receiving stimulus grants and were open to do that, tried to pursue with some of the trades and some of the really high-quality blue-collar, gray-collar jobs, which require long-term apprenticeships. Are there going to be any pilots to look at those career fields?
So I can't promise what any pilots will be, because that would be kind of prejudging the outcome. But I can tell you that we have working partnerships. USA is involved. They're one of the co-chairs currently. And as a labor affiliate, are very much interested in looking for an opportunity to have a public labor business pilot project that we might, again, use as a testing kind of proof concept.
And then one last one, if I might, really quickly, I'm sorry. In terms of the affordable housing financing strategies, I know that AB 1156 is under discussion at this state as a tax increment financing mechanism, but it doesn't, as my understanding is right now, it doesn't have the requirement that something be fighting blight. So when we're looking at those strategies and financing strategies, again, I'm asking you to project forward, so maybe that's a premature question, but...
Yeah, and I mean, 1156, you know, it's just, you know, it wasn't exactly like we were knocking it out of the park on housing affordability while we had redevelopment. So I'm not terribly convinced that 1156 is going to be all that great. We may need to do more than 1156 allows, and I think we may need to be prepared to at least talk about pressing more policy levers and be thinking about ways to preserve affordability that we currently have in the region, but at the same time recognizing that we do have a growing population. We have to grow the stock of housing overall at the same time. So we don't expect to find a silver bullet. We're going to have to be going on all fronts.
Great. Thank you, Doug, for your patience with our introductions and then informing us about this grant. Congratulations, and I'm sure we will hear from you again at least once it comes together. All right.
You will, and thanks very much for the direct feedback on education and on the seniors and disabled. I'll certainly make sure we find ways to plug those issues.
Great, thanks. Okay, our next item on the agenda this afternoon is the Climate Initiatives Program. And Brenda is going to give us that information. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank
you. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Brenda from MTC's planning section. And I wanted to come here today to talk to you about the Climate Initiatives Program that MTC operates. The last couple of months, we've come to you with the preferred investment strategy for Plan Bay Area. And included in that is a future policy direction for climate to help us reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And at that point in time, there were some requests to bring forward a presentation on what's currently being conducted by MTC in this realm. So that's what this presentation is. So the Climate Initiatives Program that was started under T2035, our currently operational regional transportation plan, includes several elements, the first being an innovative grant program, the second being a combination of several different public outreach and education programs, the next being a Safe Routes to School program, and the last being a program evaluation that spans all of these separate components and ensures that we're learning from them as we move forward. So the key questions that we want to learn from that evaluation of all these different programs is, what is the quantified estimates of change before and after the program? Are we successfully reducing greenhouse gas emissions? What are the costs and benefits of the program? Can it be replicated elsewhere in the Bay Area? Are we removing barriers to implementing these programs? What are the key lessons learned? And what different or new approaches can we learn, or can we use the next time around to make these programs more successful? As another part of our evaluation, we are also looking at the co-benefits of the program. Although this is a climate program and that is our number one priority, we do want to learn how we're doing on other things as well, because in the future we might want to continue funding for some of the programs that aren't as successful at reducing emissions because they are successful at these other things. Some of them that I wanted to highlight for you were, are we increasing physical activity? Are we reducing air pollution and the associated public health impacts? And are we reducing household and transportation costs? The first of our public outreach programs is a series of smart driving pilots. There's not much research that has been done around the nation on smart driving, and so we really wanted to kickstart this research and do it ourselves before we invested heavily in this area. And smart driving is the idea that an individual in their current vehicle can improve their fuel efficiency just by driving a little differently. So it is very much a behavior change public outreach campaign. The first of the pilots is using in-vehicle real-time fuel efficiency or miles per gallon meters. So it would be something that sits on your dash, and you would understand in real time, oh, when I step on the accelerator really hard, my fuel efficiency is decreasing. But if I accelerate slowly, then that improves my fuel efficiency. Or if I continue at a constant speed, then I'm doing much better. So it provides you that feedback instantaneously to help teach and train you as you go. The second is a question of, if we just provide smart driving education, so if we just tell people these are the desirable driving habits that we'd like you to adopt because they will improve your efficiency, will people actually adopt that behavior? Is that enough? And the last of the pilots is basically the same as the first one, but instead of a permanent fixture on your dashboard, you would be using a smartphone application. So these pilots, we have just finished collecting participants through our 511 website, and we'll start implementing the first round next month. The smart application is on a little bit later of a time schedule because it is part of a larger pilot that ITS Davis is doing. So this is a statewide program, and we have paid in essentially to increase the sample size in the Bay Area to make sure we can get something that's statistically significant for our population. And the results of these three pilots will determine whether we roll out a smart driving campaign in the next climate program, and if we do roll one out, which elements are going to be the most successful. The next public outreach program that we are funding is an electric vehicle campaign. At this point in time, we are just creating a marketing plan. We are not actually, we have not dedicated funding to the implementation of that plan. We want to make sure that we get the groundwork right and then take it to our commission before they approve rolling out the marketing campaign. And although electric vehicles cost a lot of money, there is a high barrier to their adoption. If you can get someone to switch to one, it is one of the most efficient ways at reducing emissions, even if it's not the most cost-effective for an individual. And we feel that there hasn't been a good amount of marketing by the auto industry around this area. There are still a lot of disbeliefs, still a lot of range anxiety, thoughts that these are, you know, golf carts that don't have much pep behind them. So we really want to try and break down some of those barriers to adoption to get the adoption rate of electric vehicles accelerated in the Bay Area. Our last public outreach campaign is called the Spare the Youth School and Youth Outreach Program, or Spare the Our Youth School and Youth Outreach Program. And this is in conjunction with the Air District and is run through part of their Spare the Air campaign. We distributed $3 million over 4 years, and this is a two-phased campaign as well. The first is a testing phase where we provided grants to organizations to test ways to encourage children and their families to use alternative modes of transportation both to school and throughout the rest of their daily transportation needs. And phase one is just wrapping up. We partnered with several different groups, including the bottom image that you see, the Climate Challenge. That was with Chabot Space and Science Center. So some of it was with programs like Cool the Earth, which have ongoing Safe Routes to School programs, and some of them are with museums and other innovative different approaches to getting the word out to children and their families. Our Safe Routes to School program is a county program. We distributed $15 million to the counties and left it to their discretion to decide how to use these funds. Most of the programs that we saw funded were education and encouragement campaigns. There were a few infrastructure projects that included things like new bike paths, better sidewalks and crossings and things like that. But we believe that it's a good sign that less and less of our Safe Routes to School funding is going towards those types of projects and more is going towards education and encouragement. And we believe that this is because a lot of those safety improvements have already been made. We've kind of crossed that barrier off of our list and are now moving on to education. The largest portion of our current climate program is the Innovative and Safe Routes to School Creative Grants. The specific goals and objectives for these grants were to measurably reduce emissions of greenhouse gas emissions, have a high potential for replication throughout the region. We liked projects that employed multiple approaches together to create synergy and create the best end result possible. We are looking to help remove substantial barriers, whether they be technical, financial, political, or policy-based. We wanted to test projects that would further best practices in the Safe Routes to School field, as well as build effective collaboration and partnerships through these programs. This was a $33 million grant program, and there were 5 eligible categories for people to apply to. The first was clean vehicles. We ended up getting all electric vehicle proposals, but we were not originally limited to strictly electric vehicles. The next was transportation demand management, showcase projects, which was kind of a catch-all for any other type of new innovative projects that came forward. The other was parking, and the last was the Safe Routes to School program. So I know we've talked about Safe Routes to School twice already. We put a lot of resources towards Safe Routes to School. But in this case, we wanted to have a competitive grant program to ensure that we were funding some new ideas. One program that I'd like to highlight is the Bike Mobile Repair and Education Project. You can see an image of the Bike Mobile in the bottom picture there. And this is a van that goes around to schools in Alameda County. Many children already have bicycles, but Cycles of Change, which is one of the program partners, has found that there are substantial numbers of children who cannot afford or are unable to take their bikes in for repairs once they're damaged, whether they have a flat tire, the brakes go out, anything like that. So by bringing this van to their schools, children can bring their bikes and have them repaired on the spot and also learn something about how to repair flats themselves in the future and how to go about that work. So this encourages children to use bikes that they already have and allows them to do so. Within the parking pricing program, we only funded one application at the end, which was in Berkeley. They are testing 3 different types of parking programs, one which has a variable rate based on time of day. One allows you to stay in parking spots for longer, but charges you more the longer you stay. Another is testing half-day or full-day on-street parking passes, which isn't something that we've seen before. But they have recognized that you can't just slap new prices on people without offering them something in return. So the city of Berkeley has gone out door-to-door and given out 1,000 free AC transit passes on Clipper cards to allow people to take advantage of that system. And they're also working with employers in the city of Berkeley to encourage them to offer more options to their employees, whether that be a company membership to a car-sharing organization, or access to the pre-tax transit funds, things like that. In the transportation demand management system, there are two grants that I'd like to highlight. The first being the dynamic ride-sharing pilot in 3 counties, and these are mostly in Contra Costa, Marin, and Sonoma counties. And in those counties, you will now be able to use your smartphone or go online on a computer and set up a real-time carpool with someone. So these are mostly going to be along corridors that are frequently traveled, but it allows people who don't always have access to a ride or if the transit system doesn't serve their needs to meet up with people in a very quick and efficient way to get where they need to go.
Brenda, what counties were those?
Contra Costa, Marin, and Sonoma. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And the one at the bottom of this list here is the Santa Rosa Automatic Vehicle Location System, or AVL system. It's a very technical term, but basically what it means is that City of Santa Rosa on Santa Rosa City Bus is installing real-time ride information on their buses. And through the my511.org program, they will be able to push out to people whether those buses are on schedule, whether they're running late or early, and on a system that has half-hour frequencies or hour frequencies on their bus system, it's very important for people to be able to have access to that information for the bus system to be an actual option for them. So when they're getting ready in the morning, they can get a text message or an email every morning saying the bus is coming 10 minutes from now, whether that be early or late from when it usually is. In the showcase program, I'd like to highlight the bike sharing pilot. This program will be launched in San Francisco, San Jose, and along the Caltrain corridor in between. And the hope and thought is that this project will allow us to expand our transit network, essentially. Whether it be on the front end or the tail end of your trip, you'll be able to access a larger area from those transit hubs than you would have been able to otherwise. In the clean vehicles category, we provided funds to City Car Share to introduce a lot of electric vehicles to their fleet. And this has allowed them to expand into new communities where they previously were not able to offer car sharing services, and also expose a lot of people to electric vehicles, which also breaks down those barriers that we talked about earlier with range anxiety and the peppiness or funness of the cars. So looking forward, this is the list that you've seen before. This is for the Plan Bay Area Climate Program, and these are the programs that we plan on funding to help us meet the state-mandated emissions reduction targets. And based on previous recommendations from this committee, we've reduced the amount of funding that is going to electric vehicles and clean vehicle technologies, and brought back the Climate Initiative's Innovative Grants Program, and also upped the amount of funding going towards car sharing and a few other programs. And this will really allow us to test a broad range of projects rather than kind of putting all our eggs into the clean vehicle, electric vehicle basket. And just for the people who are new, there are several other things that we evaluated for this list, including increasing bike lanes throughout the region, another increased safe routes to school program, providing shuttles to main transit hubs. And all of those were deemed to be less cost-effective than the projects that you see on this list today in terms of their ability to reduce GHG emissions and help us meet that state mandate. So that's why you see the projects that you do. So that's the end of my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them. So that you know, Ursula Vogler's information is also on here as well, and she is the one who's in charge of our public outreach campaigns.
Any questions for Brenda? I got Linda and then Lori, and then Tina and Kathleen.
Okay. I have a question. A lot of the work that you're doing with the grant sounds like the same thing that Ride for Bay Area Commuters used to do. Is that still in existence? Do you work with them?
The rides program is no longer in operation.
It is not. Okay.
Some of those responsibilities were taken over by our 511 program. Some of them, unfortunately, has fallen by the wayside. But you're right. A lot of the programs are complementary to those and are continuing to build off of the good work that was laid by that group.
I used to manage the employer program there. Okay, thank you. That's what I want.
Thank you. Lori?
Under the Clean Vehicles Grant funding for $14 million, what examples can you cite from various cities and counties that really implemented this to make a difference?
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, at this point in time, these projects are really just kicking off, so I don't have any results of the programs to share. I can give some other examples of the areas that these projects are going to be touching, though. So the city car share fleet is being expanded to other portions of Berkeley and San Francisco. The electric vehicle battery swap stations will be providing electric vehicle taxis in San Francisco and San Jose. The municipal EV fleets will be giving electric vehicles to counties and local governments all throughout the Bay Area. There's 90 vehicles, I believe, going to over 20 partners for that project. So it's a wide swath of the Bay Area. And for the tribal project, there is a tribe in Sonoma County who we usually don't get to work with very closely at the regional level, and they will be receiving some electric vehicles as well.
Okay, the reason I ask the question is because one of the challenges that the city of Richmond is having with some of the electric vehicles, I mean, we can rent the hybrids with no problem, but the electric vehicles, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, people are wondering, well, how far can I go? And, you know, before I run out of electricity, or who can I charge to? I mean, I think some of them can actually plug into our 220 voltage mm-hmm. or whatever. So, you know, but, you know, they're also asking, would it be a strain on my electric bill, those kind of things. And that's why I wanted to know the challenges that.
Yeah.
Would you be able to keep track of that? Or are you asking... since you're funding many of these programs, would you be able to keep track of the successes and the well, the pros and cons of them?
Absolutely. So we want to be able to quantify the emissions reduced, but like I said earlier, we also want to learn those types of lessons learned. What are these barriers? How did you overcome them? So through a lot of survey implementation tools or interviews with the people who are implementing the programs, we will get at that. And then also we're working closely in conjunction with the Air District, who's putting out a wide series of chargers throughout the Bay Area. So hopefully we'll be able to present that information so people know, once I start out on my trip, I will have somewhere to plug in if I have to. And also through the public outreach campaign, hopefully we will dispel some of those misbeliefs that I won't be able to get to work in home or to pick up my kids in home, et cetera.
Thank you. Tina?
Hi. I'm wondering what are the three counties that are participating in the ride dynamic ride sharing pilot doing the same program? Is it the same technology, or do they all have their separate projects? Because I'm familiar with the Contra Costa one. I'm just wondering if they're mm-hmm. sharing technologies. And I have another question. Do you want me to save it?
Sure, I'll address that quickly. Three counties are using the same technology. That was a requirement. They actually came in as three different grant proposals initially, and we told them that the only way we'll fund this is if we have a collaborative and consistent program between the counties. And so they came together and have worked together on that.
Okay, good. And then the school and youth outreach, where does that stand? I noticed that, I mean, you talked about that phase one is coming to an end. That was the testing these different mm-hmm. projects. And now what? I don't notice that is on the looking forward.
Right. So phase two will be, it's still drawing on that initial $3 million that is identified for the 4 years. We're 2 years into the program. And they will be taking the projects that were successful at just a few schools and rolling them out to larger areas throughout the region. I wish I could tell you which ones were identified at the end of the day, but I believe that's still being finalized, and Ursula, my counterpoint, is the one managing that project, so I don't have quite the details on how that phase two is going to eventually be looking.
Thank you.
In terms of the Spare the Air youth, I would just really encourage that we find, especially with our limited English proficient populations, mm-hmm. high school youth and youth are great ambassadors to their parents and do great behavior change work pushing up to their parents. The question I had was, so these cost effectiveness measures per GHG reduced are what were used in the final scenario. So we don't have the cost effectiveness measures yet, and I don't see things like bike lanes and whatnot on this list. But you started off by saying that some projects might be so great in the co-benefits that mm-hmm. they generate that they would be brought back. Can you speak a little bit more about how that's going in the evaluation?
Absolutely. So the projects really, for the most part, we don't have any results yet. We're still waiting to get those in as the projects continue to roll out. So that's why we haven't included a lot of them in this next round of funding. But I could see, or I envision that in future plans, we will fund some of these projects that are successful for other reasons. For example, bike routes and bike lanes were not identified as being an efficient way of reducing emissions, but clearly that is something that we regionally feel is important to fund, and we will continue to fund. It's just not for the reason of reducing emissions. Or our Lifeline program, for example, we continue to fund those programs even if they're not the most efficient emissions.
Egon?
Thank you. That's a really good overview of all the projects. I wanted to ask a little bit, though, about what's in Plan Barrier Climate Program. Mm-hmm. And if you could give a little bit more detail about the reduction in investment in electric vehicles, because I think the council here made a lot of comments last year about that. And I don't know if you know, we had a session with the full commission earlier, and part of it was about understanding the impact of our suggestions and advice. And I know that was a big piece of our concern, was that there was a heavy subsidy around that. And then maybe as a related part, if you could explain a little bit more, still, given that there is a concern with the cost per GHG ton reduced in terms of making sure that we're investing in the right way, why then so little for car sharing and van pool incentives? Mm-hmm. Those are very small amounts of money, but very low cost. And in particular, if you could explain that, because you said shuttles were not very effective at a cost per GHG ton, and sort of explaining which kind of shuttles were analyzed and how those vary from van pool incentives.
Mm-hmm. I'll go backwards through your questions. The shuttles that we analyzed were feeder shuttles within a 5-mile radius, I believe it was 5-mile radius, of major BART stations, to allow people to easier access to those BART stations so that they can get where they need to go. And these would be something that's a circulator system that we would continuously run during peak hours. And those are different than the van pools, which are leased by the individuals who are using the van pools. So we have less cost there. It's more startup incentive cost that we would be providing to those van pools. So the burden on the regional agencies is much lower for those operating costs. And why we're not investing more in car sharing in van pools is because in this scenario, this $13 million for car sharing, we've already maxed out car sharing, in our opinion, in the region. This assumes a 15% adoption rate throughout the entire Bay Area, which is about the adoption rate that we have seen in the most densely concentrated car sharing areas to date. So we don't believe that there would be any benefit of investing more in that area. Same for van pools. The nice thing about this van pool incentive is that this is really just a 2-year startup cost, and that's all that we as a regional agency envision having to invest in the system, because once we hit those 2 years of offering incentives, we will have enough data to start collecting National Transit Database funds, and so we'll start regenerating funds, and the program will then become self-sufficient. And so that's why it is a lower cost to the regional agency. In terms of the electric vehicle programs, the two of them were both cut. The regional electric vehicle charger network was originally more in the range of, I believe it was triple the cost that you see there. And the vehicle buyback and plug-in or electric vehicle purchase incentive was double the cost previously at $240 million. So those were huge hits, and it was a lot of it because of the comments from this board that people who are buying electric vehicles are generally already privileged, and we should not be giving them more incentives than are already being given at the state and federal levels. And so we reallocated those resources to up car sharing to the maximum that we thought feasible, because that was low, previously funded at a lower rate, and also bring back the grant program to see if we could get more creative, inventive ways of reducing emissions that would help these other groups as well.
Thank you. I truly appreciate the numbers that are on here, and I do recognize that you get the most bang for your buck by taking maybe a car off the road and transforming the household into an electric vehicle household. However, in looking at this, what I see is a very urban-oriented policy and a very middle to upper-class policy. So the charger network is really, going back to what you just said, is going to affect those who have the means and the capacity to have the need for an electric vehicle charger, same as swapping them out. So I'd like us going forward to do a little more emphasizing on programs and policies that can actually affect our low-income and our immigrant populations, because there may be car-sharing opportunities for some of these communities that we're not recognizing and not taking advantage of. I look around East San Jose, I look around my neighborhood, and every family doesn't need a vehicle, but every family needs a vehicle periodically. So, but these are the same people who are using beaters to drive around in that are as polluting as a single-stroke gasoline-powered lawnmower. And so that's where I would like to see some more of our emphasis going in the future, is on programs that actually take some of the populations that we're not reaching out to at this point and enabling them to participate in this. Because if we don't, even at the ground level, even at the Safe Routes to Schools programs, if we don't start educating at that level, then we're never going to reach them as adults, because they're just... I look at the cars that, because I live next to a junior college, so I look at the cars that are parked in front of me, and it was like I didn't even think that a car that old could still run. But yet, I have a whole street full of them. Mm-hmm. So that's just a little, going forward, food for thought.
Any other comments? Yeah, hang on.
I said one additional question, which was around kind of modeling TDM programs at different employers. There's certainly some very effective ones. That was sort of somewhere, you've got this community, you know, commuter benefits ordinance, which I know is a piece of legislation, mm-hmm. which is, I assume, why it's zero. But if you could say a little more kind of where that's falling in terms of MTC's role in trying to encourage the adoption of good TDM programs across firms.
Mm-hmm. I think the TDM idea is really kind of cross-cutting throughout several of the initiatives that you see listed. As you mentioned, the commuter benefit ordinance would require, if passed, it's currently on the governor's desk for signature, all employers with 50 or more employees to offer the pre-tax transit benefit to their employees to allow them to take advantage of that. So that's one big one. Also, the VanPool incentives. We would offer the incentives, but through our 501 employer program, we would also be partnering with employers to help them tell their employees about this opportunity, provide information about the incentives that are now available, and help promote it. The car sharing, we would also act through our 501 employer program to encourage them to have employer memberships to these organizations to help get their employees access to them, reduce their fleet needs, but also introduce more people to car sharing and let them see how it is a good fit for them.
Just following up on my previous question about the Spread the Air Youth program, that's part of the $3 million. So the rest of the program, the phase two, is already been contracted out with a particular group or nonprofit that runs these few programs?
And no.
Given the grant to continue it?
The $3 million was the amount that we have set aside within MTC to put towards this program. Not all of it has been awarded at this point in time. We awarded smaller portions of it to test these pilots in phase one. And then phase two, we will award the rest of the funding, the vast majority of the funding, to the programs that are successful and that we want to roll out at a larger scale.
So that'll go out like a competitive bid process?
It would be going to the programs that were most successful in phase one.
Got it.
Sorry. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you for the presentation and update, Brenda. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next item on the agenda. Oh, wait, Brenda, you're not done yet. Sorry.
Uh-oh.
This card came up to me in the middle of all of our questions, and so Jane Kramer, would you like to come back and speak to this item also? Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Jane Kramer, maybe I found a place to insert an idea that's been, some of us in Temescal neighborhood have been kicking around. People who have mobility problems, who are stuck in their homes because their bodies are too frail to even get them to the bus, but they function. Okay, so the idea was maybe you could, with two or three or four stations, salt and peppered within the neighborhood, whether it's via businesses or private persons who have the time, have a couple of go-karts here and there, and you call up and make a reservation. Now, that lets you get around the neighborhood and get necessary basic stuff done. It also lets you get to the BART or the bus if you need to go further.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. Now we're on item 7, the staff liaison report. Pam.
Well, I will just touch on the items that have changed in your report since so much for us getting out early today. You'll see the lilac color, I believe that's the color, lilac revised staff report. And just to let you know what's different between that and the one that you received, inadvertently the attachments were left off of the report that was sent to you. So attachment A was the Programming and Allocations Committee memo that went to them this morning on the delay of the TIP adoption. So that's now attached to the lilac version. And attachment B was the East Bay Housing Organization flyer, actually that Carlos Castellano sent me, alerting you for their Transportation 101 and Affordable Housing 101 seminars that are coming up. So those are now attached to the lilac version. And then the other thing that's different is we received the release of our new Getting There on Transit guide. Some of you know, in addition to online 511, we, as a public information staff, are urged to continue to create a paper version of all of the transit network here in the Bay Area. And it's quite popular. Surprisingly, it's very popular for people that don't live here, that come in on flights at the airports, and don't necessarily have that access to 511 when they're on vacation or something. So we get a lot of requests for this guide. But it is usable, I think, to people that don't have computer access as well, to let you know what agencies are out there and how you get around. And the most popular part of it is the big map in the center. So I encourage you all to take one over on the table. If you need more copies, the library can get those for you. And there's also an online PDF that you can download, and I've included all that information in your new LILAC staff report. And that's it.
Great. Thank you. Everybody's running over there to get those right now. We should sell those. any council... Any council member, for you, we have a good deal for everybody on this committee. You have to pay double. Council member reports, it looks like Dolores.
Yeah, I would like to thank Pam for putting this day together and coordinating us all and getting the information to us. The other thing is that I would like to bring up the consolidation of the transit agencies. And I wonder if Pam, you could send us a link to the article that came out in the San Francisco Chronicle, what was it, 2 years ago or something, where they did a study on all of the transit agencies and the history of the transit agencies. And do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm happy to see if I can
find an archive. Maybe the library has copies of it. But anyway, if you could send that to us, I think that really did a nice job of describing how the agencies all evolved, and then the of course the cost benefit of them consolidating, and a likelihood that they probably will never do that. But anyway, after we get that, if we could maybe schedule a discussion about that, I think it would be really good for us to because there was so much interest today, you know, when we met with the commissioners about that topic. And I think that's really a good historical place to start. Thank you.
Thank you. Carlos?
Thank you. Just not to beat the drum too much, but I appreciate Pam, for putting in the East Bay Housing Organization's cross-training in there. Partly, I just want to bring it up because yours truly will be one of the presenters on the housing side, the Housing 101. And also on the transportation side, you'll see that some MTC staff will be there as well. And the idea is, at least for East Bay, we're trying to see if we can do one in Alameda County and then maybe do another one in Contra Costa County later, early next year. So stay tuned. Hopefully you can make it and learn a little, I'd say both, on both sides.
Thank you. Rich?
Yeah, I would like to sort of piggyback on Dolores' idea, but I've been involved in this for some time, as well as many others have, with the transportation unification. I would like to be a little more focused on it. I have experience with merging local unions, and you don't do it overnight. I would like to focus on the five big agencies, BART, San Mateo County, both SamTrans, Caltrain, Alameda County, and VTA. I think that's where to start. It's not unlike Los Angeles, that has a large area of unified transportation with feeders from the outlying counties. And I think rather than trying to run a mile race in a sprint, we start with something that's doable within some of the lifetimes of people within on this, not all of us.
Well, you're so old.
Well, I'm a lot older than you are.
Tina?
So I'm wondering, when do we, how do we establish our agendas? First of all, I want to say it is really, really a pleasure having Pam. And when I get an email, it's just, she's wonderful. I know. I had to. I really felt it. And anyway, I wondered, I don't know how our agenda is set. How do the items come to our agenda? And then when do we have the opportunity to discuss the issues that came up today that we would want to address?
Great questions. Usually I wave my magic wand and Pam taps her red shoes and poof, we get an agenda.
Stomps my foot, more likely.
our agenda primarily is predicated by the work plan that the commission sets for us. And what that details down to is, what is the commission going to talk about next month that we need to address this month? And part of that was created just by the commission being up and running and dealing with a lot of policy issues long before this organization, this newly formed committee, was formed 3 years ago. So from the beginning, I feel like we've been playing catch-up in terms of agenda items and in terms of how do we implement discussion points on the next, on the information we saw this morning. Pam and Aegon and I think are going to talk that over and see what our committee agendas look like in regards to the commission's timeline over the next few months, and then bring back the list once it's developed. I think as Kendall Flint said, she would get that back to the chair, Adrian, and then I think the commission will look at it, we'll look at it, and try and figure out how can we pop some of these things up on our agenda. So I'm not exactly sure when or in what form or how the topics we talked of this morning will come back to us, but I assure you they will come back to us probably sooner rather than later as we look at our agendas. And I think we'll have to look at the list and then try and figure out which ones we want to tackle and how much time we think we might want to spend on them. Pam?
Can I just add, I do, from time to time, you do say, can we hear on something on this subject matter, like the climate initiatives that came to you today. It took 5 months to get that back, worked within your schedule because of Plan Bay Area items. So If there is a topic that you would like to discuss, please make sure that Dolly or myself knows about it. And, you know, we can try to work it in. There are moments where there's sort of a lull in what the commission is doing in terms of policy decisions and what this council is talking about. So there are moments where we could put that on your agenda and bring it forward. So I just need to know that it's a subject matter that you're interested in. So.
And because I have long-term loss of short-term memory, if you could give that to us in writing in an email, that would be the best way, I think, for us to track it. And that's for all members.
And I would like to, I didn't say it earlier today, but I'd really like to be able to address youth outreach and safe routes to school programs.
Okay. Great. Egon?
Oh, I was just going to say, I agree with Rich and Dolores that we really should take a closer look at the kind of transit agency situation. I will say that topic was discussed a little bit in the Transit Sustainability Project, and when we get into that, I participated in a lot of that. Some of you were there, too. I can share my perspective on it about why MTC didn't pursue it, but a lot of the discussion we had earlier represented the kind of political calculation that some of the commissioners make, and I think that that's particularly where we, as they said, push them on it and call them on it, where we think it ought to make sense. And so the short answer to why they didn't do anything is when they looked at the 28 agencies, there were 7 high-cost ones, roughly speaking, and 21 low-cost ones. So if you merge a really small agency that costs $80 an hour with AC or Golden Gate or Muni that's $170-$160 an hour, it's probably going to become more expensive overall, and that didn't seem to solve the problem. But that wasn't necessarily the only way to go about answering and solving the problem. So I actually think we would have a lot of feedback and suggestions about how to approach that. So hope we can discuss it at a future session.
Great. I have Jim and then Alan and then Federico.
All right. Well, this has been quite a learning experience for me. A great deal of information, and of course, I got mine a little bit late, but I've been able to review most of it. And I have to say that I'm really very interested in the accessibility issue, and I think trying to bring consolidating agencies all together. Of course, that's a long-term project, but that's certainly one that I'd like to be involved with to some extent.
Thank you. Alan?
I think something's changed over the past couple of years, and you can see it with the consolidation of the police departments and fire departments in San Mateo County. There's a financial imperative today that you just can't do things the way you used to do things or you lose it all. And I think these agencies are going to realize soon that they don't want to lose it all. So maybe many more of them will jump on a good plan if a good plan can be put together.
Federico and then Rich.
I believe in that we are far more successful with smaller steps or smaller bites in a way. And in that regard, again, while I strongly favor consolidation of Bay Area transit districts, we have far too many, I urge us to strongly focus on the doable, which to me is consolidating paratransit services throughout the Bay Area, and at a minimum, consolidating paratransit services within particular counties where there are multiple paratransit agencies. Many of these transit agencies, which have the obligation to provide that paratransit service, do not want to operate the paratransit service themselves for a variety of reasons. I think there are all sorts of economies of savings that can be made, but I would strongly urge us to put that topic on the future agenda for the council. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to the upward costs. I know where that came from. That's one of the themes that the head of my transit agency comes up with. I've challenged him on it. There's so many ways to do that. I would say that the person that raised that in my agency has the most to lose. And so what I would say is that there's ways of averaging the cost, grandfathering current employees, and in a very short order be down to a much cheaper cost. It might be a startup cost that's a little higher for a long-term savings. I think what you have to do is just make people understand you're not going to contract their jobs out. And then I think it'll go smoothly.
So we're discussing items that we have not yet decided to put on an agenda. So I'm going to stop it there. Thank you. All right. Without any further business before us, as I look at the agenda just to make sure, I wish to adjourn this meeting again. Thank you again for your input this morning, and we'll see you in a month.